Exception number 12215, rule 4.
Mr. Cameron, reel 4.
Well, I'm off the hospital ship at Liverpool and was sent straight home to Aberdeen and had to report to London every fortnight for medical examination for flying. I did that for 2 months, and in September 44 I was passed as fit for duty and went to an advanced flying unit in Shropshire for a refresher course, day and night flying. Met all nationalities there. And at the finish, was posted to number 1 Fighter Squadron at Manston in Kent. They were equipped with Spitfires. And our duty once a week was to go across to the continent and bed down for the night at an aerodrome, either in Belgium or in Holland. And then in the following morning, we used to take off as a squadron, fly north to Jutland, and over Jutland we used to meet a daylight 1,000 bomber raid. We acted as top escort. We flew at 30,000 and the bombers were at 19,000 feet, and we used to see them into the target, turn around and see them out as far as the coast, and they went back to United Kingdom and we went back to our base in Holland or Belgium. Spent the next night there, did the same sort of duty the following day again, and after two trips like that, we then came back to UK for the weekend. And that was our weekly tour of duty.
How did you like doing that work?
Fine. Great. We were based in a Dutch aerodrome at one time, and our billets were in what had been a girls' boarding school. And a huge building and all that, and we had the old straw mattresses and so on. And in the wall, near each bed, there was a bell push. And there were Dutch words printed on the bell push. At every bell push. And we didn't know what it meant, of course. And we got the old gardener in from the grounds and asked what it was. And it translated into "ring if you require a mistress." So instead of going to pictures that night, we were all sitting in our beds ringing bells, but nobody ever came.
How dangerous was the work?
Not really dangerous in 45. I joined one squadron on New Year's Day, 1945. The German Air Force by this time was really seen. If they had the men, they didn't have the machines. If they had the machines, they didn't have the petrol. So we don't know what they did with what they had, but they never come up and bothered us. What we did have was the first of the German jets. And we were warned about them. They had no armour plating. They had no machinery. They had no weapons. And I think it was an ME-252 or something like that. But it was a little thing which was jet-propelled. And they used to come from above us and fly in front of us, downwards. And the idea was to decoy us after them down to Akak range. Now at 30 feet we had no Akak, 30,000 feet. The bombers were at 19 and they were vulnerable. We used to see them going down, some in flames sometimes. I once asked why they flew at 19, didn't fly higher, never got an answer. So obviously you weren't supposed to ask questions like that. But these little things used to whip in front of us, and we were supposed to chase them, and we had strict orders not to budge, just ignore them, because they were quite harmless.
Did anybody disobey orders?
No. On one occasion, one flight commander, Jimmy Adams, he was another metropolitan policeman, he asked permission to chase one, but he never got near it. He just rejoined us later on. But normally, you were forbidden to chase them.
What did they look like?
Like a little, they always remind me of Dumbo.
Well, cartoon character.
Yes. Little fat bodies and little squat wings. I always thought of Dumbo.
Did they cause you any apprehension when they came?
No. We had been warned about them beforehand. It was a while before I ever saw one.
And they never fired?
No, there's no armament. So they were light, they could go high. When we were at 30,000 and they came from above us, just like a flash.
So they performed a totally fruitless job?
They were a decoy to get the top cover down to Akak range.
But they never succeeded?
Not with us. I don't know whether any other squadrons did, but we were forbidden to go near them, to pay any attention to them.
What kind of Spitfires were you flying?
Mark 21.
How did you like to fly those?
Smashing. They were great. They had two 20mm cannon, and when we got them, we did air-to-ground gunnery, of course, and target practice, and we were warned, beware when you press the button, because you felt the thing stood still for a second. They were such a jolt. They were powerful. They were good. But we never had to use them in action.
How did they compare with flying the Hurricane?
Oh, far faster. About 40, 50 miles faster.
Were the controls more delicate?
I suppose they were in a way. Yes, the Spitfire was a more delicate thing in any case. It was a beautiful thing to fly. It was like a gentle leopard. When I first stepped inside one at Operational Training Unit at Eshert, Northumberland, the thing that struck me was I sat in the cockpit, there was this great long nose in front of you, which was all engine. And this comparatively small body, slim. So you had to be careful taxiing them because you had this great weight in front and a small tailplane behind. And you had to be very careful taxiing downwind that the wind didn't lift your tail, because you had the weight in front and the wind behind, you could easily lift it.
Was that the Mark 21?
That was any of the Marks early on. You'd always have to be careful with the Spitfire, taxiing downwind.
So were you shot at whilst you were escorting these bombers at all?
No. There was plenty of Akak down below, but it couldn't reach us at 30,000. No chance. But it could reach the bombers, and it did.
What else do you remember from operating from Manston?
After a few weeks, a month, maybe 5 weeks, we transferred to Coltishall in Norfolk, but we still did the same job.
How did the two aerodromes compare?
They were both peacetime stations. They were both very comfortable to live in, work in. And your room was above the mess, and it was very nice. Very nice indeed.
When you were at Manston, you weren't involved with that attack which the Germans launched to try to knock out the Air Force during the Ardennes offensive?
No, wasn't that Junkers 88 night bombers, night fighters?
I think that was an attack actually, probably on the day you joined, actually, the 1st of January.
Well, there was no word then of it that I remember now.
What kind of bombers were you escorting? Lancasters?
They were mixed. There were Lancasters, there were Halifaxes, there were Flying Fortresses. It was a marvellous sight. As far as you looked, the sky was full of bombers. There would be over 1,000, sometimes it was 1,150. The sky was full of bombers.
How did you like flying in European conditions after South Asia?
Oh, marvellous. Marvellous. The Asian climate was very, very trying. And a lot of the pet ideas came apart when the aircraft went out east. I'm thinking particularly of mosquitoes. When mosquitoes came into being, they were God's answer to the Air Force. They were marvellous. But when they come out east, they fell apart because they were made of wood. And the white ants, there were cases on record of mosquitoes taking off in India and falling apart in the air because the wings come off.
But did you have any problems adjusting to the flying in climatic conditions of a temperate zone?
No. No. I had to get accustomed to the oxygen. I never had oxygen. And the first trip I ever did with one squadron was from our base in Holland down to Nuremberg. And I hadn't realised then that our fuel was calculated almost to the last gallon. And as regards oxygen, there were two schools of thought. You had to bend down to get the bottle screwed on, and I thought, well, I don't want to fiddle with that once we're up in the air. So on the way up, I put mine full on and left it. I got oxygenated. And after we came down, I couldn't stay awake. We were sitting at tables outside waiting for the grub to come up, and I kept falling asleep, absolutely fast asleep, out. Well, I didn't realise till afterwards, you know, I'd had far too much oxygen.
So it was a kind of oxygen poisoning?
Yeah, yeah. Because I wasn't tired, I mean, I'd had a normal light sleep the night before, nothing like that.
Did you feel nauseated?
No, not particularly. I just kept going fast asleep, sitting where I was.
Was that the only effect?
Well, it's the only thing I was aware of, and it wasn't my habit of doing that. And I had no cause to do it as regards sleep the night before, so from then on I put the bottle down to half or a quarter and left it there.
How did the war come to an end as far as you were concerned?
In Europe?
Yes.
We were on stand down by this time in Coltishall, and we were doing just daily training here to ground gunnery. We'd fairly recently got Spit-21s, and we were breaking them in and getting the feel of them. And all of a sudden, the news came through that there was going to be an armistice any day now. And it came on the Tuesday.
Did you celebrate it?
We got one day off. So I just stayed in mess. Wrote some letters. There was a party that night in the mess, and they put all the armchairs and all the sofas together in the middle of the room, and then some climbed over with a favourite waff and made whoopee. I was missing, I was upstairs.
This is at Coltishall?
At Coltishall, yeah. Which was a lovely... It was a pre-war station too. Very nice.
Were you asked to go out to fight the Japanese after that?
No. When I was at Turn Hill doing the refresher course after I was passed fit for flying in 1944, our instructors were open to questions at the end of a lecture. And some of the lads asked, when we're posted from here, where will we be going? And they said, who knows? There was a big demand for Typhoon pilots at that time. We knew what they did. And then we were told, the rest of you, you'll probably go to the Far East. And that rang bells in my head. And I said, how about me? I'm just back from there. And this instructor, I suppose, not to be outdone and wanting an answer, he said, oh, you'll probably go out again. Which I thought was a disastrous thing to be told. And I thought, ye gods, I don't want to go back out there. So Barbara Castle was married to a man who was a reporter, I think. He used to do with newspapers anyway, Ted Castle. And the Daily Mirror ran, I think, a daily column, or certainly a weekly column, by Barbara Back. And I didn't know who that was at that time, but I found out it was Barbara Castle. So I wrote to her, kid of the Daily Mirror, and told them my worry. And got a very prompt letter back saying, the minute you're told you're going to the Far East, you contact me by telephone if you wish. And I will see to that.
This is from Barbara Castle?
Yes. So I felt relieved because I really was panic-stricken at the thought of going back out after malaria and all this in 6.5 years. But I think the lad had just been floundering for an answer and didn't want to be caught out. But they had no intention of sending people out who'd already been out there, unless they'd been home for a year or two. That was in 1944.